In April 2020, I was at Charlotte Mathaka, you were there. I asked you a question around potential PPE corruption. And you said to me, you've taken measures. There are measures in place to ensure that there is no PPE corruption. You said that you don't ever want to hear of such a thing as a commission of inquiry into the requirement of PPEs. And then you saw what happened. We had issues around food parcels. We had issues around tender bonanzas, a lot of them linked to this very party here at Luthuli House. What guarantee do you have for South Africans that we will not be down back this very route when it comes to vaccines? That we will not be outraged as a country watching our leaders and those linked to our leaders get to the trough and make good on much needed monies for vaccines that must save lives?
The PPE process happened, and I regret that it happened as it did. And we had wanted and thought we had put in measures from a Treasury point of view, from an Auditor General point of view. We had put in some measures.
What did you do wrong?
But I think, you know, when you deal with crooked people, they find all manner of loopholes, all manner of ways in which they are able to crook the system. And the other weakness, of course, is that we were doing everything on an emergency basis, and people just threw away the rule book and went ahead and acquired these PPEs in the way that they did. But as we said, the investigations are ongoing. Money that has been utilized or lost to the state is unjustifiably is going to be brought back, and it is in the process of being done in a number of instances. On the vaccines themselves, we have sought to put the processes in place that are going to prevent that. Now, the government is going to be the main acquirer. We are going to be the main acquirer. Working together with the private sector, we are going to be able, yes, to do the funding as well, the payment. And so the sourcing is going to be better managed than what we saw with the PPEs.
What's going to be different, Mr. President? Because we speak about people who are crooks and they do crooked things. But the reality is you can implement as many plans as you have and the strategies to avoid that. But those crooks are still in the system. Not a single person has been prosecuted from the PPE corruption. So what are you going to do different now? Because even if you put in those plans in place, those people are in the system. Those people are still in the ANC. They still have links with those that are in senior positions in government.
Well, a number of people have already been dealt with. The investigations are ongoing. They are being dealt with. And some who were holding key positions in the public sector have either been disciplined, dismissed, or some of them have resigned, as far as I know. So a number of them are being dealt with as we speak. And with the vaccines, the strength of doing it through the channel that we are talking about is that we are going to be able to have proper management of this. We have learned a lot of lessons, and we are going to try by all means to avoid the mistakes that we have made in the past.
We need to move to the economy, Mr. President, because we're also running out of time. Listening to this special broadcast, we're live on Eyewitness News. It's a broadcast on all prime media platforms, 702-947, KFM, and Cape Talk. Let's talk about the economy, Mr. President. That's the second priority for ANC. When you announced the extended lockdown, the restrictions, some of the restrictions remaining in place, there was no relief package that was announced. There are a lot of people working in sectors that are now strained, sectors that are not allowed to operate, like the alcohol industry, for instance, that are feeling the pinch. And they're asking the question, where is the relief? Because we are struggling in terms of our livelihoods. Why did you not announce a relief package? Do we not have the money?
We do not have the money. That's the simple truth that has to be put out there. We are constrained from a financing point of view. The relief measures that we announced last year amounted to about 10% of our GDP, which is quite a big amount of money for a middle-income economy like ours. We were punching at a very high level, like your sort of high-income country economies, but we took a bold stance to support our people, to support small and medium enterprises, and to support a number of other companies. And right now, we are at a stage where we now have to fund the vaccines, which is going to amount to a lot of money as well. So we are constrained, but we are also hoping that these measures will not be measures that will go on for too long. We want to see them being short-term measures focused on achieving the objectives that we've got. So I don't see them being permanent measures or medium to long-term measures.
Mr. President, how did we get here? You know, it's one thing to make an argument that COVID has resulted in a battered economy, but one also questions whether or not it's the mismanagement, really, of the fiscus by the ANC government that got us here. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's been a combination of a number of things. Firstly, the economy has not been growing at levels that would please any amongst us. Now, what COVID then did was it also constrained our revenue collection. We've got a 300 billion rand shortfall in revenue collection, which is quite a lot of money. But at the same time, yes, there have been a number of challenges in our state-owned enterprises, where a lot of money has also either gone to waste. So,
not a portion that to the ANC government.
I would say that yes, we can apportion blame, but the fact of the matter is we've got to deal with the problem going forward, and that should be our focus right now. My focus now is to say, how do we get out of this hole? We are in a hole. And rather than be at the bottom of the hole and say, you are to blame, you are to blame, I'm saying,
and that part of the problem.
Of course, I mean, we do, but we want to build the ladder and get out of this hole. That's where we are.
Yeah. Mr. President, I would like you to speak to South Africans right now that are in the sectors that are not allowed to operate.
Mm.
And because you have an obligation as the state to those people, when you implement regulations that somehow stifles those industries, even if, and I appreciate how tough the decision is for you because you have to find the balance, but what do you say to South Africans right now that through the regulations you announced, they're unable to buy food, they're unable to pay for electricity because you've been unable to extend the 350 rand grant, you've been unable to come up with a relief measure of sorts, even if it's for those specific sectors? Do you admit that you have failed them as the government, because you don't have the money, because you have the obligation as the government that when you strain their industries that they work in, the least you can do is at least take care of them, even if it's for that short period of time?
We have an obligation to save lives. That is an obligation that our people expect us to live up to. And we also have an obligation to protect livelihoods. And that is why we've sought to do a balance between saving lives and protecting livelihoods. From the get-go, if one can use that term, that is what we've sought to do. And we've always sought to support our people and to also support the various businesses. And the measures that we have now imposed are measures that are of a short-term nature, and that is why I've often said, yes, our people have had to sacrifice a lot, so all of us have had to, and I feel sad about that, but want to make sure that we are able to even have an economy after we have saved lives.
And some of the problems are so self-inflicted, Mr. President, and sometimes I would say economic self-sabotage. I want to give you an example. when it comes to the alcohol industry, at the airport, at duty-free, I was shocked to find out that you can't buy alcohol at duty-free when you're exiting the country. The main purpose of the regulation banning the sale of alcohol is to alleviate the pressure on our health system. So how does it make sense that a claimant who buys alcohol at duty-free to consume it in China, in Russia, where they are allowed to consume alcohol, how does it make sense that they're not allowed to leave their money here, money that we need, and go consume the alcohol wherever they're going? Why is that regulation and the ban on the sale of alcohol still applicable even in that sector? Because the impression it creates is we just come up with these regulations without properly strategizing and saying, where can we alleviate the pressure? Does it have to be a blanket one?
Well, I think we may well have been blindspotted when it comes to that, because we have allowed alcohol to be exported. We've allowed the wine industry to be able to export, because they came to us and said, we understand the ban here, but we need to meet orders offshore, allow us to export. Initially, we had even prevented that, but good sense prevailed in the end, and we said, we should not be preventing this. So you're citing a very good example about the duty-free. And it's a blind spot, and we should have been able to do so. I will take it up. I will definitely take it up.
Mr. President, I want to bring in the issue of your spokesperson, Ms. Kusela Diko. It's been 6 months that she's been on what I understand to be special leave.
Mm.
Are you confident that processes around Kusela's leave, Ms. Diko's leave, are above board and lawful?
Yes, we've sought to check that. She did take part of her own leave initially, so that happened. And now she's going to be put under a disciplinary process where you are now allowed to be on pay while you go through the disciplinary process. So I think that is something that is now underway. It is underway, and she will go through the disciplinary process within the department itself.
So there is no such thing as special leave?
Well, she's been on special leave. I don't know how the full mechanics of it has actually worked, because it's been done at the acting director general level and the chief operating acting chief operators, chief operating officer level. So I don't believe that there's anything underhand, quite honestly.
And then also just the impact of whatever saga Ms. Diko is facing on you, you know. This is somebody in the ANC seemed to be close to the president. In the country is the mouthpiece of the highest office in the land. The issue has hovered for so many months. Now we hear about concerns raised by the SIU regarding monies that are not declaring certain interests. What is the damage that this has caused on President Cyril Ramaphosa, whose rise, by the way, is an anti-corruption ticket? What does that say?
Well, I guess it does have an impact, and that is why, in the end, she had to step aside. And I would have thought that that in itself was a clear demonstration of our willingness and determination to deal with this matter as properly as it should be dealt with. So the matter is now being dealt with, and I think in the end there will be an outcome of this matter which we will be able to communicate to all and sundry.
Why did it take so long? Sorry, Clem. Why did it take so long to get an update from you? It felt like the country and the media had to coerce the president to get to a point where you give us an update on what's happening with this particular issue.
I guess it was not even a hesitancy or unwillingness to give an update. It was the processes that were still underway with the SIU, because we've given it to the SIU, they've dealt with it, and they've given a, if you like, a preliminary report, and their report is still to be dealt with.
All right, we're just about to wrap up our interview, Mr. President. Just last three questions on the Integrity Commission, perhaps. You have spoken about delivering that General 8 statement of the Integrity Commission getting more teeth. You've been speaking about this for the longest time, really. What does that look like in 2021, Integrity Commission having more teeth?
Well, we want the Integrity Commission to, one, act without fear, without favor, and without prejudice. To be an entity that in the ANC we will all respect and regard as independent. Also to be an entity, and remember, Integrity Commission is almost like a new phenomenon in the ANC. And we're learning as we go on. Sometimes we make mistakes, but we want to confirm that structure as an important structure in the body of the ANC as a whole. And where we make mistakes, we want to correct them so that its standing and its positioning in the ANC is well respected.
Is that not ambitious, Mr. President? Because I would argue the ANC leadership is collapsing that structure, because you choose which recommendations you want to accept. Take Ace Magashule, for instance. Mm. The Integrity Commission says he has to step aside because he's formally charged. The conference resolution says if you are formally charged, you need to step aside. So what they're saying is not something out of this world. They're possibly reminding you as the NEC that this is actually what the conference resolution is. It's a mandate you were given as the ANC leadership. What do you think of that recommendation? Is there a reason why it should not be accepted, given that it's on the basis of the conference resolution?
Well, the National Executive Committee has pronounced itself on this matter, that the matter is being dealt with, it is being processed, and we're looking at all the intricate aspects of it, and it is going to be decided upon. So the Integrity Commission has taken its own decision, which decision stands, and we're therefore going to see at the NEC level how we take the process forward. So the matter is under consideration, and I know that people want it to be done here and now. And it is being dealt with. We're not sleeping on the job in as far as this matter is concerned.
Leadership, I think it shocks me, Mr. President, that you need an Integrity Commission to tell you to step aside when you're formally charged, when the conference resolution told you you must step aside. And I think it speaks to the ethical leadership in the ANC. Do we have ethical leaders that are willing to say, I'm going to step aside because there are these formal charges against me and I respect the conference resolution? Why must we be...
We're not the only organization in the world to have an integrity structure, and many others also have that, because politics, being what it is, it needs also, like democracy, to be properly nurtured, to be properly shepherded, and we need to do all those things to bolster it. And I see the Integrity Commission as a structure that seeks to bolster the value system of the ANC. It needs to give it sprinkling cleaning on an ongoing basis. And that's precisely why us as the ANC and many other political parties have a structure like this. And so we're not the first and we're not the last to have it.
Mr. Ramaphosa, where is the disciplinary committee of the ANC at national level in all of this? You know, it's really great to speak about what the Integrity Commission can do for the party, but there is a structure that's constitutionally mandated that can give sanctions to ANC leaders and members. Mm. It never seems to come into play at national level. Where is it? That's number one. Secondly, the guidelines that the officials are currently coming up with, what do you envision them to have, to include? Do you see them wanting the Integrity Commission taking the recommendations now being binding and then merely being endorsed by the ANC? Where do you stand as Cyril Ramaphosa?
Well, the issue of the disciplinary committee, that is a structure of the ANC, and it deals with disciplinary matters as and when they are brought to it. So it is a standing structure of the ANC. It deals with matters, and some of those matters never really see the light of day because it continues to deal with matters on an ongoing basis.
Big issues that catch our attention.
Once they are brought to the NDC, then they will be dealt with. So they have to be brought there, and over and above that, we have the NDCA where people can also appeal. And The Integrity Commission recommendation, the processes and the guidelines are being worked on. They are being worked on, and we will be able to pronounce on those once they are out.
Can I
let us...
We have,
Can I dare you? We need to wrap up, but I want to dare you. And I'm asking you to take us into your confidence.
Yes.
Do you think Ace Magashule, the Secretary General of the ANC, should step aside?
The matter...
Cyril Ramaphosa.
Well...
Not the entity, not the top six.
Yes, whatever I say, I have to say as Cyril Ramaphosa, the President of the ANC. So you cannot separate the two. Unfortunately, you might want to divide me into two, but today you cannot divide me into two.
We have to remember, Mr. President, we're really out of our time.
Yes.
What's happening in Uganda is very problematic. We have to get your response. As the AU Commission Chair, there are concerns about human rights abuses. There are concerns about just communication channels being shut down. What are you saying? How are you reacting to the developments?
Well, we, as the African Union, obviously we want election processes to be run in line with universally accepted principles of respecting the human rights, the right to communicate, freedom of speech. So that is what the African Union stands for. And we would like that to be observed, to be embraced throughout our continent, because our people want to be able to vote freely, to express themselves freely, and that is universal. It cuts across all countries on the continent and in the world, really.
My parting shot, I cannot leave without asking these two very quick questions. I'm sorry, but Bran Molefe is testifying at the State Capture Commission.
Yes.
And he's made claims that Glencore sold shares to you so that you could use your political power to benefit Glencore. Quick comment on that. And then the last one, are you going to be fighting Julius Malema to be the first one to get the vaccine when it finally becomes available?
Well, when the vaccine becomes available, I would like all South Africans to participate, to come forward and get the vaccine. If Julius Malema wants to be the first, I'm glad. But at least, you know, he will be one of the first. In as far as Brian Molefe's testimony is concerned, I think there is a lot of untruth in saying that I got shares because I wanted to advance the interests of Glencore. So far from the truth, and obviously people will throw stories around to try and tarnish people, but I will respond to the real facts and deal with them in as far as that is concerned. I will be having my own opportunity to go and testify before the Zondo Commission.
Mr. President, thank you so much for giving us your time. And by the way, are you going to run against Tutu Zanizuma in 2020? Are you ready?
Is he running?
He says
oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
So are you ready for it?
That is interesting. We will see. Thank you so much.